Hello, everyone, and welcome to I Guess We're Grown-Ups Now. I'm your host, Carrie Halstead. Today's conversation is with Garth Braithwaite, and it's all about food. My acknowledgement of the episode is also Garth Braithwaite. He is a podcaster as well, and I just like his show, Web Friends, and I've stolen his format blatantly. Thanks for being an inspiration and a support of the show, Garth. My quote of the episode is from American-Nigerian writer Teju Cole in his book Open City. There was no starting point for the rebellion, but I could mark an arbitrary one, that a grown-up was someone who, first and foremost, could drink a Coke at whim. Links and show notes for today's show are at goodstuff.fm/grownups/4, and there are lots of them. Garth is an interesting person who is involved in a lot of projects, and so I hope you'll check those out. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter at grownups_FM, and you can find us on iTunes where you can rate and review the show as well. That really helps out a lot. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to I Guess We're Grownups Now. I'm Carrie Halstead. And tonight, my guest is Garth Braithwaite. Hi, Garth.
Hey, how you doing, Carrie?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I have to be careful not to get too excited because I'm in a cement room, and when I talk a little louder, it echoes worse. So
you know, you're in a giant auditorium.
Yeah, apparently.
And yeah, it's very drama.
There's no one in my auditorium because I can hear echoes.
Garth joins us tonight from a large dungeon.
Yeah, apparently.
Where are you joining us from?
I am actually in Idaho Falls. My family and I, we recently relocated from Vegas to Idaho Falls, and I have the coolest office in the world, which happens to be a garage or a cement room. So
that is
it's cool. Awesome for a lot of things except for recording podcasts, which I've got to have to fix. I'm going to have to fix that.
I'm sure you'll fix it. Garth has at least one other podcast. He has a great podcast called Web Friends that you can hear on the goodstuff.fm network. Do you do other recordings as well?
I have some things in the works. Nice. And I have some stuff that I have been actively killing. So no, right now it's just Web Friends.
Nice. I love Web Friends. I hope other people will listen to it too if you haven't yet. So tonight we're talking, our theme is about food, which is so like talking about air. It's a big topic. I'm kind of excited. And of course, within the context of adulthood, being a grown-up about food. But before we dive too deep into that, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself? Who are you and what's in your life?
Yeah, so I am an employee, a designer and a developer for Adobe. And I happen to work from home, which is convenient since we moved to Idaho where there is no Adobe office. That should be obvious, but
right.
I have to remind people. They're always like, oh, so do you work for, is there an office up there? No, no. And I have 5 kids. We've got 4 girls and 1 boy, ages from 9 to down to 4 months, coming up on 5 months. And my wife and I have been married for 11 years. We met while we were going to school in Utah, and then she's from Vegas, so she told me that I would be a lonely man if I did not move to Vegas. So we moved to Vegas, and we lived there for most of our married life, and we've just been up here in Idaho for a couple months. So that's me in a nutshell.
Awesome. Have you listened to previous episodes of I Guess We're Grownups Now?
I have. I've been listening since your pilot recorded by yourself. But I'm very excited. I love the episode so far. So I'm very happy to be on the show.
Are there any particular themes or concepts that have been resonating with you as you listen?
I find it amazing how similar I am, or I think it's just universal aspects of growing up and, you know, concepts about the relationships and going through learning how to be married and learning how to have kids and all that stuff. They're pretty universal for everyone who has kids and is married. But at the same time, there are such kind of subtle differences as well. So I enjoy hearing people's stories, even if they don't have the same story as me. I actually prefer that. So it's been fun to listen to it.
Yeah, it's fun learning how people go through exactly the same thing, but they take different messages from it and have a different way of verbalizing it. that helps you learn about yourself as well as about other people. So,
and there's a thing that you learn when you're married to somebody, it turns out that not everyone had the same childhood, which it kind of comes as a shock. Like, we'll go to the episode theme, right? They don't eat the same foods.
Right.
Like, they don't have the same traditions. And even if you've been dating this person for a long time or even living with them, it's not until you, well, I guess living with them is pretty close, but it's not until you really join your lives together that you realize, hey, this person has weird things about them that are totally different than what I grew up with. So, yeah, it's interesting to see that and listen to other people as well.
Right. I agree. And it's always interesting the things that you found completely foreign about your partner, the things that you stretch yourself and like take into your life too as a family.
Yeah.
And they become a family thing. And that is how, I guess, you turn into a family instead of just two people or four people living together. It's building a culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you cook stuff yourself?
I do. So my wife, she does not enjoy cooking necessarily. She doesn't avoid it and she doesn't hate it. It's not a high priority for her in her day.
Yeah.
And so I do. I enjoy cooking. I enjoy trying out new recipes and trying out new things. But I do a majority of the meal time when possible. I work from home, so I can do most of the meals.
Right. Yeah. I do most of our meals too. And because I'm the one who enjoys it well, and I was taught to cook as a kid growing up. It was something that my mom taught us. Were you self-taught or did your parents teach you or did you learn from TV?
Not TV, but a little bit of the self-taught and from the parents. My parents are actually immigrants. They were born and raised in South Africa. And so they were getting used to American culture as well, and American food. Thursday is date night in our house. So,
oh, wow.
We don't actually go anywhere because we have five kids and a four-month-old. So we do date night at our house. It usually involves me grilling something. And then we feed the kids early and then we send them downstairs to watch a movie and we enjoy a meal by ourselves and a 4-month-old.
Well, that's pretty delightful.
It is. It is. It just interesting how much of this family stuff, and growing up kind of, revolves around food. Like it's normal for a date, like to go eat.
Right.
Like that's just kind of the default. Like, what do you want to do? Oh, let's go get something to eat. Let's go spend money on food.
Right.
That's just kind of what we do. We've just been doing it and cooking it ourselves a little bit. Saves a little bit. Doesn't really save money. You go and buy three steaks, you're going to pay about the same if they're any good as if you would at a restaurant. So,
right.
I guess there's no tip.
What did you eat tonight for supper?
We had ribeye. We had ribeye and a wedge, a nice iceberg wedge with bacon and blue cheese.
Nice.
It was good.
Awesome. You barbecue?
I do. And I'll be barbecuing when the snow sets in here.
Yeah.
I'll keep going.
I haven't barbecued much into winter, like when the snow really falls here, but I could. There's no reason I couldn't. It gets really cold here. Maybe that's why I don't.
So I grew up in Montana, and I know it's not the same as Saskatchewan, Saskatoon.
Yeah.
But it is the closest you can probably get
yep.
within the continental U.S.
That's right. Yeah. It is probably pretty similar, really. We might get a bit colder up here, but I barbecue as long as I can in the summer because, it's just so nice to have burnt meat.
It tastes like happiness.
It does. It's very good. I was going to tell you what we had for supper.
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
Because earlier when we were chatting, I was like, I guess I can't have macaroni and cheese for supper tonight like I was planning. Or Kraft dinner, as we call it up here.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have Kraft dinner, but we did order out wings. At this place, we've been trying a couple times for wings. Because we really, as a family, all of us like wings, which doesn't happen that often that all four of us agree on
like for meals. Yep.
Yeah.
So my husband ordered wings from this place, and an hour and a half later, they showed up at the doorstep. Oh. And I was starving. Well, I was hungry an hour after we ordered them. I was hungry half an hour after we ordered them. So an hour and a half later, the guy shows up and looking very sheepish, and he's like, I got lost. My GPS got screwed up. Here's your wings. They're on the house. I'm like, really?
So, did you have to like microwave them? Like an hour and a half?
A little on the cool side, yeah. But they're still pretty saucy and delicious. And we were so hungry. But I'd been giving Mark a hard time. I'm like, call the place, call. I'm getting mad. And this is my relationship with food. If my blood sugar level gets low or I haven't eaten in a while, I am a hangry person. I yes. get hungry, angry, and irrational. I'm normally a level-headed person, but I lash out. I get paranoid. It is like I'm the worst when I'm hungry. So normally when I think supper's coming in an hour, I won't eat. I won't snack. But if I knew it was going to be an hour and a half, 2 hours, I definitely would have eaten.
So we have the same. My wife is exactly the same. Her whole family, though, is like, back to the you marry into stuff sometimes that you just aren't used to. And she's totally the same. But worse is they don't always recognize what the cause of the problem is.
Totally. I'm oblivious.
So I think that's one of the reasons why I started cooking more, is because when she gets to that point, she's not in a mood where I could be like, hey, why don't you go make yourself some food? That doesn't work out. So yeah, that's where I don't even say anything. I don't like try and point out you're probably starving. Right. I try and just quickly, quietly go and make something satisfying and put it in front of her. And suddenly she realizes how starving she is.
Mark was like, that's great customer service, free wings. I'm like, this is not good customer service.
There is no money worth that.
Exactly. He's like, really? I thought it was nice. Free wings? I'm like, talk to me 3 wings in. I'm like, I'll be in a better mood. So 3 wings in, I'm like, yeah, that was good customer service.
It was, you know, just crowd emergency control, right? Like, I was just trying to fix the problem. So
the delivery guy saw the fire in my eyes.
Yeah.
I still remember the day I figured out what my problem was. I was like 25 or something, and a few years into being married to Mark, and we still had no kids, but we'd go out to like the mall on a Saturday morning or something, and I'd be like, let's eat. As soon as we got there, I'd be like, let's eat. And he'd be like, no, he doesn't like to eat right away. Sometimes if he gets an upset stomach, then he's like uncomfortable in the mall. And I'm like, no, let's eat. And so we figured out that we're like have different love languages of eating. Like,
oh yeah,
he cannot eat if he's going out. I have to eat if I'm going out. So
different now love languages of eating. That's great.
There's my Christian culture seeping in. But yeah, it's as long as we know, now that we know that, we have survival skills. And
you need to have a safe word.
Snickers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear. So bad. Do you have a favorite food you like to make, either to eat or just because it's fun to make?
Yeah, we have a couple. I actually really enjoy America's Test Kitchen. They have some really great recipes, and I love the idea behind it. They go through, like, so my favorite one to make of theirs is actually the chocolate chip cookies. And what they do is they take a bunch of recipes and they systematically go through them and figure out what makes the best chocolate chip cookie.
Wow.
And I love the science part of the cooking. It's great. So they have a really good recipe for a browned butter chocolate chip cookie, and it is amazing. Huh. So we make them about once a month.
Are they a website?
They do have a website. I think it might be paid for some of it. They have cookbooks and they have a show. That's where I think it really is taken off, as the cookbook. But yeah, I love the idea behind, hey, we tested this out. It wasn't just the back of the chocolate chip cookie bag, or the back of the chocolate chips bag, right?
Right. We will put a link in show notes, everybody, in case you're listening off of iTunes. And you can get that at goodstuff.fm/grownups/4 for this episode. Oh, so chocolate chip cookies is my specialty too. I've got a recipe that I got from my mom when I left home, and it just, I never mess with it. It is like always works. It's kind of a chewy oatmeal chocolate chip recipe. So
that's my favorite. An oatmeal cookie? That's fool's gold. That's not.
Okay, I'll try your ground butter chocolate chip recipe.
Oatmeal sounds like it's good for you. That's not that's not a chocolate chip cookie. That's one step away from being a muffin, right? Like, that's not.
There's a lot of butter in it. Does that help?
Okay. That's help. It's a long way.
When you go out for a meal, what's your favorite thing to order? Or do you like try to go all over the map?
You know, we talked about that. I travel quite a bit to conferences, and I go to new cities, and I find myself with a company credit card and a new city that I don't know. And I always try and find something new. I've tried alligator, and I've had some really good sushi. I've had some terrible sushi, so I'm very wary of that now. But I've also had like great New York pizza in New York and great Chicago pizza. So yeah, I like to, when I'm traveling, I like to try everything possible that I can. Which is new. We've talked a little bit about, before this episode, about what food means to being a grown-up. Mm-hmm. And part of that is I have now realized that I enjoy trying new things, which is not something that I enjoyed as a kid.
You were more of a picky eater or just like a standards eater?
Fairly standard. And I see it in my kids as well. My wife is not that way. Her life does not revolve around food like mine does. Like, obviously, I think that goes hand in hand with the hangry thing. If she doesn't eat, she doesn't notice that she's hungry because food's just not a priority for her in her day until it's a problem. For me, I absolutely love food. So, I noticed my kids, they'll eat anything. Some of them, but some of them are a little bit more like me. They're a little bit more picky.
That's interesting. Those two things might not be as connected as you think, because I'm all about food, but I'm the hangry one. And my husband can like skip food for both reasons, both because he's not obsessed with it all the time, and also because it doesn't matter if he's hungry. Like, emotionally, it doesn't matter if he's hungry. So he probably, I mean, he could probably eat that Soylent stuff and be happy, as long as it agreed, like, not lactose or something like that, he would be fine with it too. So he doesn't like trying new restaurants or
and I didn't, it wasn't,
so this is something you grew into.
It was, and to be honest, my mom actually is that way, and so is my brother. My brother's been he's worked in the restaurant business most of his life, and so he is all about, like, I love to go and visit him where he works because he's always like, here, let's go try this. Not all of my siblings are, but my mom and my brother, and now me. But I grew into it. They didn't. They just were always that way.
Right. Well, that gives me hope for my one kid who's a picky eater. Maybe someday she'll. I mean, I don't really, I don't care for me, except for right now when it's hard to feed her. But, like, I like to think of it as, like, having a full life experience is also like being totally into food and trying new stuff. And I hope both my kids get that someday.
Yeah. Yeah. I have it with, my 4-year-old right now. She's 5 now. They keep changing ages, but, she does not, there's certain foods that she just decides she doesn't like. Right. And some of them I do not mind. She's like, I don't like chocolate. I'm like, sweet.
Right. That's one less problem. Yeah,
exactly. I have no problem with that. But then she's like, I don't like salad. I don't like hot dogs. I don't like chicken. And I'm like, come on, we got to eat something.
Right.
And so my wife and I are like, maybe she's having a hard time because she's malnourished. But she's like these are thoughts the parents have. They're like, maybe I'm not feeding my kid enough. Maybe they're not eating enough. But like, seriously, she's almost as tall as her 7-year-old sister. Like, she's not any problem with weight and growth. She's totally fine. So parenting with food is like paranoia. It is
Totally.
It's weird.
You're given so much information and the food guide, the food pyramid and the four food groups and all these rules, like make sure you're eating like 5 pounds of vegetables every day. And it's like, well, my kid won't eat a vegetable a week. So, but they're growing and they're really smart, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have, what does your growth as an adult into responsible eating been like? Do you know what I mean?
Well,
you reach a certain age where you start realizing you can't just eat anything. And for some people that's, you know, early on in childhood. But at some point in everybody hits that, I can no longer eat all of everything I want.
Oh, see, I go through denial sometimes.
Well, totally.
Okay, so we'll get into the health a little bit of it, but when I realized that my ideals around food changed when I left the house, right? And that's totally normal. Suddenly you have to fend for yourself and figure out how you're going to eat. But then I served a 2-year service mission in Mexico. And I was totally immersed in the culture. I didn't have any American friends. Well, I had a couple once in a while, but for the most part, it was me in Mexico.
You weren't eating at Senior Frogs.
No, no. No, I was cooking food myself that nice. We'd buy food from the corner store, or we'd have members of the church who would cook for us. We tried to get as much as that as possible because they were much better cooks than we were. But I totally, that's where everything that I thought about food kind of tipped itself over on its head because, like, we talked, when we first started talking about this show, way back when I mentioned avocados, like, that's what growing up is for me. When I realized that I actually do like avocados and that they're amazing, that's like, maybe I'm a grown-up now.
Right.
And mangoes, these are things that my parents in South Africa, they had trees and they would grow and they would pick them off and they'd eat them fresh. And I thought that was the most disgusting thing in the world when I was a kid. But suddenly I'm in this culture. And when somebody says, hey, we're having mangoes for dinner and that's what we're eating,
because right.
that's all we had, they were the most amazing things in the world. So I've come back now and I've been able to share some of that with my kids. They still don't like spicy foods, but I figure that's an age thing. They'll grow into that a little bit. I'll keep putting it in their food, whether they like it or not. But it wasn't until my parents started to have health problems that I started to focus on, hey, maybe I should figure out what I'm eating and what I'm doing with the food. My dad is a type 2 diabetic, and my mom is insulin resistant, which is the step before type 2 diabetes. And the doctor said, with parents like that, your kids have like a 99% chance of having the same problems. And just so a little background on type 2 diabetes, it is completely treatable with diet.
Right.
Type 1 diabetes is not, but type 2 is. And so my sister and I started what we call the save your foot diet.
That's morbid.
Incredibly insensitive, I know. But my dad hasn't lost his foot or anything. He's actually been doing much better with his diet. But it's interesting. There's with type 2 diabetes, there is a genetic disposition, and then there's a diet aspect of it as well. And the genetic disposition is on the rise. It's not weeded out by natural selection because it's a later onset thing. But there could be some environmental aspects of it too. You go read some blogs, you'll find conspiracies about stuff.
Right.
It'll weird you out. But it's on the increase, whether we're just getting better at diagnosing it and recognizing the problems, or whether our food and our diet is terrible, which it is, or the genetics, those factors coming together, we're all going to have problems. And as our doctor says, if anybody lives long enough, they're going to eventually get type 2 diabetes.
Wow.
It's just part of the body breaking down. So, yeah.
Wow.
So that changes our diet. And that happened probably about a year ago, actually, today. And so my sister and I, we've been tracking all the carbs that we eat. And after going through this process for a while and getting used to counting carbs, my daughter in July 1st, we took her to the doctor and her blood sugar levels were way out of whack. And so we took her to the emergency room and she was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Now, type 1 diabetes is totally different. Like I said, it is an autoimmune disease that happens to be killing your insulin-producing cells. And so the insulin's needed to regulate blood sugar. Mm-hmm. So she can eat any carbs she wants. There's no problem with her eating carbs. She just has to have insulin injected into her because her body doesn't produce it. While me, on the other hand, I have to avoid carbs at all cost because my body doesn't do the right things with it. So yeah, it's an interesting problem, but it was amazing how we were kind of prepared for it by our family started thinking about carbs and eating and changing our diet, and then this hit and we were totally ready for it. We're at least aware and know how to count carbs before we even had a type 1 diabetic in our family. So,
wow.
Yeah, it worked out. I wouldn't say nicely because that sounds wrong.
No, it is always good when you go into a medical situation sort of forearmed with some knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, totally ignorant diabetes question. Can you get both kinds of diabetes at the same time?
You totally can. That is a great question. Because they are unrelated in a lot of ways. They haven't found any trends in the genetic disposition for type 2 diabetes and type 1 diabetes. But in essence, what happens with type 2 is the body stops using the insulin, but your body overproduces. So if you're a type 1 diabetic long enough, your cells can do the same thing with the artificial insulin that you have. It'll stop using it correctly.
Right.
And then you'll run into the same problem. You could become a type 2 diabetic. It just so happens that you would be, your pancreas is already not producing insulin. So, yeah, it's an interesting question. I asked the same thing to the doctor.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they were that different.
Yeah.
It's like having a cold and the flu at the same time.
Yeah, it's a little unfortunate that they have the same name because culturally, diabetes is the butt of a joke, right? And it makes sense that it is. It deserves to be when it comes to the diet side of type 2 diabetes.
Well, and the fear. I mean, we deal with fear with humor, so.
Right.
Yeah.
And when we eat ourselves into a disease, like that's something that culturally we should be aware that that's not okay.
Right.
So I understand that, but then the type 1 diabetics kind of get lumped in with them. In fact, a lot of times when we tell a doctor, when we tell a teacher or something, oh, she's type 1 diabetic, they'll be like, oh, we'll make sure we have sugar-free snacks. And we're like, no, that's totally not the point.
In fact, sometimes you really, really need to have sugar on hand.
And so the thing that we have to say is, you know what, she can eat anything that everyone else can eat. And if we're stopping her from eating, maybe we shouldn't be giving it to everyone else, which is probably a hard truth. Confront.
I have a similar problem with food and one of my kids in that the word allergy means two different things. People talk about allergies that make them sneeze and their eyes water, and that's terrible. It's not fun. I have seasonal allergies and environmental allergies too, and it is not a party. But my older daughter is anaphylactic allergic to peanuts.
Okay.
So we are peanut free and getting people to understand that I read once it was, I forget whether it was a letter to an editor in a magazine or something or some interview in an article about allergies, but somebody said the phrase, just because peanuts makes your kid sneeze doesn't mean I have to stop feeding my kid peanuts. I'm like, you don't understand. I was so enraged at nobody.
Have you gotten the cures? Have people confronted you with, here's how to cure peanut allergies?
There is some science research being put into finding, not cures so much, but exposure therapy if you start them off with a little bit of peanut flour and gradually work that up until they're eating many peanuts. It's worked in some kids that their body starts to react normally to the protein instead of abnormally to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's no, no, there's I'm no, asking about the miracle. No.
Oh,
so there aren't.
No, I haven't.
People who are like, Oh, no, my cousin had this and they did. Oh. They just stopped eating gluten and now they have no problem.
Right. Yeah. Well, gluten's another one because my sister has celiac. So in the next year, we're all going to go through blood tests to find out if we're all celiac. And yeah, that's a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah. But, food, back to the growing up and the food.
Yeah.
July 1st, I grew up a little more or a lot more, unintentionally or against my will, when we got hit with that diagnosis. And we spent the couple days in the emergency room and in the hospital adjusting to this new lifestyle. And now our lives, before they were, food was an important part. Mm-hmm. I realized that I was spending when our fifth baby was born, I realized I was spending most of my day cooking food, cleaning up food, and cleaning up the byproducts of food.
Right.
Which was pretty much my whole day. But then now food is everything, right? Mm-hmm. Every time before we're going to eat, she has to check her blood sugar. We have to calculate the carbs. We have to put it in. We have to wait a certain amount of time for the fast-acting insulin to act because it's not quite as fast-acting as sugar is. It changed. It changed everything for us. And I had to grow up again. Kind of one of those things. In fact, when I was in the hospital, we had an educator come in and talk to us and try to explain everything to us. And like I said, we were fairly well equipped already. But I said, now I know this is a ways off, but what happens when she leaves the house as an adult? Does this like radar constantly pinging, trying to find out what her blood sugar is and that just awareness of what she needs, does that go away? Because I can already feel it starting to turn on. And she said, no. She said, they were at a conference and this guy got up. He was 54 years old. He was diagnosed when he was 12. And he said, I talked with my mother the other day and she asked if I had glucose tablets. Like, it's just a part of being a type 1 diabetic parent is it's always on.
Right.
And it doesn't go away. So, yeah, this is my growing up story now.
Right. It's taking two very key parts of your life, that is, you know, having offspring and eating, and like balling them up in a way that you have to think about it all the time.
Yeah.
It, not only is your heart walking around outside your body, your pancreas is walking around outside your body. So, yeah. Wow. That it is. That would be life-changing for sure. That's adulting at a whole expert level.
Yeah. And I didn't expect it, didn't ask for it, obviously.
No.
But I read through other people's, and it's not specific just to type 1 diabetes. There are, like you mentioned, celiac, there are any number of things that can hit a family. Sometimes they're birth defects. Sometimes they are mental disorders. I have a brother who was born with Asperger's, or mm-hmm. he had Asperger's. I don't know if he was born with it. They don't really understand it 100%. But like these things shape your family. They shape who you are. It shaped me as a sibling, and now it's shaping me as a father. It changes things. And not everyone can recognize it. I remember in the episode you talked with Jay about what would our parents have done if they had social media. And you mentioned using social media as kind of this counseling group session, and that they would maybe go to the bar or your parents went to Bible study. But there isn't a community really close to us. So we have a Facebook group that we are a part of, and we kind of go through and we make jokes and we commiserate, and yeah, it's just interesting. It taps you into a different group of people, and I need social media now to be able to get through some of that.
Right, for sure. Can we pause? And I want to talk about our sponsor. I would like to thank Campaign Monitor for sponsoring I Guess We're Grownups Now and goodstuff.fm. We talk a lot about Campaign Monitor on goodstuff.fm. We prefer them instead of other email companies because the quality of their product and the amazing people that work on it. Not only has Campaign Monitor enabled us to create newsletters that are beautiful, but working with them is fun and hearing about new features is exciting. If you need to set up a newsletter for yourself or a client, Campaign Monitor is the way to go. Their user interface is easy to navigate, and you can get your clients the tools they need to create and send newsletters that get them more involved with their customers. Go to campaignmonitor.com and get started today. Thanks to Campaign Monitor for supporting Good Stuff, and I guess we're grown-ups now.
So I totally put you on mute while you were doing that, and I was eating my... Well, I put myself on mute. I was eating a pear. Because I figure it's fitting for this episode. I should be eating.
Yes, I should be eating too. I have nothing. I have a tube of lip balm in front of me.
Please don't eat that.
Okay. It's tempting. It smells like melon. Okay.
Won't taste like melon.
No, probably not. It'll gum me up inside. Not good. Okay. So are there foods that you liked as a kid that you do not like now?
You know, we talked about this a little bit as well, my wife and I. We went through the questions. I really like the format of the show, and I love the ideas behind it. So I've been excited in talking about it. But there's not a ton for me. Bologna. I cannot do bologna to save my life now. Like, if I had, here's a package of bologna, and here's two pieces of bread, and this is what you have to live off of, I just eat the bread.
Right.
But as a kid, I would eat it. I had no problem with it. So, but other than that, not really. Pickles.
Oh.
I used to at least they were bearable.
Right.
And now every once in a while, I'll be like, pickle sounds good. And I'll take a bite. I'm like, no, that's terrible. Why would I ever eat this? These are terrible things. Bananas. Yeah. I would consume bananas as a toddler, and I would consume them like a factory. I would just grit my teeth, apparently, and squish them in between my teeth and just swallow.
That is scientifically proven to be the best way to eat a banana.
It was fast and efficient and, I guess, instant potassium. But and I've noticed my kids have gone through the same sort of thing. They all go through phases where they enjoy bananas, but then they hit probably about 2 or 3. Yeah. The bananas don't do anything for them.
Right.
But, yeah, no, not really. Other than those random foods, I pretty much eat everything.
I think I'm sick of pure sugar candy, like...
Like rock candy and candy floss or cotton candy? Like,
yeah, cotton candy I can't do anymore.
Oh, yeah, no, you're a grown-up. That is a sad day when you can't do cotton candy.
I might as well just write my will and be done with it, eh?
Yeah.
That's sad, but there's not much I don't like, period. Never mind stuff I did like as a kid. What have you grown into? What foods do you know for sure that you did not like as a kid that you love now? Besides avocados that we talked about.
Oh, avocados. That was great. I want that as my ringtone. Avocados and mangoes again are the big ones, but. Right. I wouldn't have tried half the stuff. I would have just gone wholly on smell and appearance and
name.
Unfamiliarity. Yeah. Like sushi was, that one I didn't even get into until probably late 20s. It was, I had a boss who I really respected and I grew to, really, respect his opinion on a lot of things. And he said, no, I promise you'll like sushi. You just have to go to the right place.
Right place.
And I let him talk me into it. And it changed my life after that, right? Like, it was amazing.
I totally had the same boss and the same experience with sushi. Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Everyone out there who's like, no, I've tried sushi. It wasn't good. You haven't tried sushi.
No.
You just haven't. And I know that sounds totally douchey. And it does. It's very condescending.
No, but you... Find someone who really loves sushi.
Yeah. Find someone that you respect their opinion of movies.
Yeah.
That's something totally unrelated for some reason. I don't know why. But someone that you're like, okay, I can trust this person. They're not crazy.
Or they're probably pretentious. You might not even like love and respect their opinion on everything. But if they're like a pretentious kind of person, they probably have immaculate taste in sushi. And they're the people who should be taking you out for sushi.
Do not just go to the closest sushi place. Do not go to necessarily even the best Yelp-related place.
No, that's right.
You've got to find someone you know.
And it might not be a very fancy-looking restaurant either.
No, no. And try uni. Don't try uni. Scratch that. That's important. Uni is disgusting and it looks like baby poop. So people who try uni or eat uni, it's just to like impress, I don't know, other people who like sushi, but it's not good. So you don't have to eat uni.
Is that the sea clam?
No, it's the sea urchin.
Urchin, right.
It's orange and no, it's not good.
It looks like brain or something, right? Sort of.
No, it looks like baby poo. It looks like not normal poop, but like infant baby poop.
That's a whole other show.
Yeah, no, that totally could be all. I don't know. It's related. It's food. It's all the circle of life.
It used to be food. Are there any foods you don't eat for religious or ethical reasons?
Yes. So I am LDS Mormon.
Yeah.
And I do not. We don't drink alcohol. And I know when we're talking about that, it's probably wasted on me, the food topic. A lot of people, when it comes to growing up, that is, you know, it's a marking of passing that threshold of adulthood is drinking. And I've never consumed alcohol in any. That's not entirely true. That's a different story. But yeah, we don't drink. We don't smoke. We don't drink coffee or tea. We do drink herbal tea and we do drink caffeine, or we can. Not everyone does, but it's not necessarily against the standards of the religion to drink caffeine. So I drink Coke.
So it's not the caffeine, it's the coffee tea.
It's the coffee tea. So there is an aspect of it that it is health related, mm-hmm. But for us, it's a matter of faith.
Yeah.
And so the wording actually says that we should not consume tea or coffee. And so that's what we don't eat. Now, there are people who will read further into it and say, you know what, I'm going to cut caffeine. And they probably are better off for it. And when I go through my health spurts, the periods of sanity health-wise, I don't drink any soda. So, yeah. But yeah. I still consume chocolate, even though it has caffeine, because it's amazing.
It is.
but yeah, so there are some religious things. There are even aspects of it. It's called the Word of Wisdom, our health code or our health standards. And there are aspects of it that actually encourage us to eat more fruits and vegetables and to eat meat sparingly. So I need to be better at it. Yeah. Because I am a carnivore all the time.
Yeah, there is this amazing quote on Twitter by Anil Dash a few weeks ago. He said, "I feel fortunate to be living in the window after automated agriculture made meat affordable, but before its impact is 100% ethically inexcusable."
Like, before we're aware of the impact of our actions, that was the window of processed foods, right? That we are just coming out of. We're like, oh, wait a second,
this is not good.
Oh, dang it! And we wonder why my parents have problems with.
Well, right. It's like, oh, cancer and diabetes and processed foods. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Now we have documentaries, so we'll be okay.
Yeah. Did you see Food Inc.?
No.
Really good, although kind of, I don't know, I had mixed feelings about what it said and what I could possibly take away from it. My problem with making too many, it gets very control-y very fast.
And yes.
I have an issue with doing that for a non-emergency medical reason. Like if you've got diabetes or an allergy, that's one thing, or celiac. And this is probably a serious, like, privilege-y first world problem, but exercising too much control, or trying to exercise so much control where you're trying to be a perfect eater.
Yeah.
I can't live like that.
Yeah. And it's easy to go down that rabbit hole, right? Like as soon as you start going on the internet and you're like, I wonder what's bad about high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, what should I eat today?
Oh, man, that you'll get to the point where you're like, okay, So paleo diet says I should only eat meat and cheese, pretty much. Maybe not even cheese. Let's stick with meat and vegetables. Some of them say that I can have dairy, some don't. I'm not allowed to eat grain because obviously that is terrible for us. I can't have any high fructose corn syrup. I got to make sure I eat organically. Like, and even with the meat, you got to be like, oh, I've got to eat grass-fed, not corn-fed, because corn-fed's terrible and it's bad for the environment. It's bad for us.
Right.
Like, you will hyperventilate and you'll get to the point where you are, your whole life is surrounded by your paranoia of food. And that's not a way to live. And that's one of the relieving things that we found with the type 1 diabetes, when the educator was like, no, your child needs to eat whatever a normal child should eat. They need carbs for growing, and that's part of their growth process. And so, I have no problem with my kid having cotton candy when we went to the fair, right? Like that, I needed my kid to have a part of that. That's, I probably didn't need it, but it felt like that. So I'm with you. Whenever it feels like Happy Feet, right? Like when you get into some of these diets, it's like going and seeing the movie. It started out like, oh, it's Dancing Penguins. That's great. I love Dancing Penguins. And then you're like, oh, wait, no, this is a movie about climate change and about how we're terrible people, which is probably true. But that's not why I went to go see Happy Feet.
Right. And it's not why I want to eat food so that I can be a better person.
We should. We should. But like, it shouldn't be the main focus of our entire lives.
Right. Yeah.
And it can be. I know people who are addicted to exercising, and it's good for them, but it's bad for them mentally and emotionally. Like, it's bad for them. Like there are things that are on the surface seem good for us, but when they become consuming, they can become very bad for us.
Yeah, completely. Okay. Are there other food things you would like to talk about?
I have no authority on this stuff.
I know. Oh yeah. We are not doctors.
Let me dispense my knowledge of food.
You're not psychiatrists either.
No, I like food.
Right. Exactly.
I have some. I'd like some more. I keep it in a jar. No, I like analyzing what I'm doing, and I like figuring out how I can change and how I can improve, and food has a part of that, but I'm going to make brown butter chocolate chip cookies once a month or so.
Right.
There was somebody who I was talking to that they said it's good to limit certain foods that you only eat once a month. And one of them for them was pizza. And that's a great idea. Pizza is a terrible thing for us to eat, especially now that I'm dealing with a type 1 diabetic. Like pizza before, we would order once a week. Going back to the craft dinner is like one of the worst things for carb wise. Like I want my kid to eat carbs, but I want him to eat fruit, right? And I want him to eat healthier ish carbs than just like pizza. Right.
Brown rice or wild rice or what's your go-to comfort food?
It's another part of being a grown-up, right? There's something that you realize that when you have kids, that as soon as you put kids to bed, ice cream tastes amazing, right? So our comfort food is Ben and Jerry's ice cream, and it's terrible for us. And we actually don't eat a lot of it. We just eat it regularly. So we eat probably, it takes us about 4 days of eating, like four servings to go through one.
Yeah.
But we do. We wait till the kids are in bed. And we have the expensive, nice ice cream that the kids aren't ever allowed to touch. They are there in the store when we buy it, and they say, hey, what's that? And I say, oh, that's ice cream for mom. I don't even say it's for me when it's totally more for me than it is for her. So I throw her under the bus.
That's expert dadding.
Yeah, but there's your parenting pro tip is go get ice cream after they're in bed. It's not a pro tip. It's a natural occurrence. It's what happens. You're like, no. You do not need ice cream. It's bad for you. Go to bed. I need some ice cream.
Yeah, totally. Oh, and for me, that's wine. After the kids are in bed. I don't even want it before. But it's my treat after. It's like, yay, made it through the day. I just want happy right now. And it's not the alcohol that's happy. It's the taste and the my words are failing me, like the routine of it, the
it's the treat of it,
the Come ceremony on. Exactly, it's the treat.
Back to the Sheena episode, she mentioned about like eating without kids, right? There was one point about like being able to sit and without the kids, and there is something about if I ate this while my kids were awake, they'd want some. And it's not that I'm selfish and I don't want to share with them. It's just, I don't like, it's a chore when you have to feed them.
Yep.
Like, oh, here, let me get you some. Let me get you a bowl. Let me make sure that you don't like smear it on your sister's face. Like,
right. Let me peel this for you. Don't knock that over. You're dripping on your shirt. Yeah.
Yeah. And after they're in bed, if I drip on my shirt, who cares? I'm going to bed. So yeah, it's great. Eat terrible things after your kids are in bed.
I sometimes go through these phases where I eat a lot after bedtime, like after 8 or so. I'll eat a lot. It's not a good habit, I don't think.
It's a terrible habit.
It is a terrible habit. But on the best days, I'm eating really healthy. Like I'll make myself like garden vegetables or like something like really tasty. Maybe it's not always the best healthy wise food, but I'm not just eating junk food. I'll make myself a tapenade or like a poached egg or like something sort of fancy because that's when I have time to think and make the kind of food that I want to instead of dealing with everybody else's needs and wants during the day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like, okay, let's go to bed so I can make a meal that I actually want to eat.
Yeah. My favorite that I did for a while was dates with goat cheese and walnuts and black olives and balsamic vinegar drizzled over it. And it was, you roast that in the oven for 15 minutes. It was amazing. But like completely extravagant for like a evening snack. It would take half an hour to make.
Yeah. 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 And those things taste great, but you can't do that with kids around or they're not going to enjoy it. Like it's just, it's not worth the effort. We had shrimp scampi the other night and my kids even like shrimp and they did not like it at all. I'm like, great, I'll eat it all myself. No problem. All right. So I want to go back to my story. Can I go back to the alcohol story?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm in Mexico and we're at a member's house. A member of the church, and I have a companion, and he's also Mexican. He doesn't speak a lick of English. He was from a different part of Mexico, so he's in a foreign place to him, too. But we're over at this member's house, and she gives us this drink, and I said, what is this? Because I didn't recognize it, and she says, it's pineapple, it's piña. So I go to drink it, and I'm like, there is something wrong with this drink. I said, hermana, our sister, I said, what is in this drink? And she goes, it's nothing. It's just pineapple juice. Oh. And I said, well, what did you do to it? And she goes, well, we leave it out. And it's fermented. It's called tepache. And there's a couple of drinks that they do this. And it's probably a minuscule amount of alcohol, if there's any at all. Like, it's probably a very small amount. But to me, who has never had alcohol, like, it was burning my throat. Like, it just did not feel right. My stomach was not okay with it. There's another one called tepache. No, tepache is the one. There's tequino. There's another one that's actually made of the agave plant before it becomes tequila. Hopefully before it becomes tequila. But yeah, so it's just a part of their culture. And I'm like, I'm not okay with having this. It probably, again, it probably wasn't even alcohol. Not a noticeable amount.
Well, it's hard to say. It's sort of the point is it's completely unregulated and homemade, right?
Right, right. She made it from home. And I'm not, and she probably got accustomed to it. It wasn't like she was probably drinking buckets of it and getting drunk off of it.
Right.
There was some amount of it, enough to trigger something on me. It was like, I've had pineapple before.
This is not pineapple.
I thought for a second, like, maybe I'm now allergic to pineapple. How sad would this be? I have a food allergy. No, it was slightly fermented.
Awesome.
Adventures in Mexico. Oh, there's one.
You went to Mexico and got drunk. Wow, that's a real novel story, Garth.
Didn't even get drunk. No, until you throw the missionary part in there. There was another time where we were told not to eat street vendor food. So, of course, we ate a lot of street vendor food. Ceviche we weren't allowed to eat, which I obviously ate ceviche, which is seafood that's not cooked, except right. They cook it with lemon.
It looks cooked, but it is not cooked. Yeah.
They just squirt lemon on it, and hopefully that kills enough bacteria to consider it cooked.
It does not. Don't Google that either. There are horrible stories about people getting terribly, permanently sick from ceviche anyway.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Oh, but it's so good. And then... some of the sausage as well, native to Mexico was amazing. And I would eat it every time and it would be the thing that would make me sick every time. Oh, so good. So good. Totally worth it. And then obviously the spicy stuff that we were told not to get into competitive stuff with eating spicy foods. Cause there were previous missionaries who they would just blast themselves with the spicy food. And of course, I did it. There are some amazing chilies that have great flavor and really, really powerful spice to them. And yeah, it was amazing. I totally recommend doing these things. Go to Mexico. Don't drink the water because they're right. You shouldn't drink the water. But you should eat all this stuff. It was so good.
That's awesome. Do you watch Anthony Bourdain?
No. Is he one of the ones who... eats anything?
He'll eat anything, and he goes to these amazing places, and he'll eat street food, but he'll also go to the best restaurant in the city too. So it's amazing. I just watch that show and like get hungry. I just, my mouth waters, and it's,
I love those shows, but then I watch them and I realize afterwards, I'm like, what did I get out of that? I'm like, I'm not really true. I didn't taste it. It looked amazing. And I can like pretend like, oh yeah, I know what that experience feels like. No, I don't. It's a useless thing. It's like explaining how things look on podcasts. At some point, you might as well just get a video. For me, I need to go to these places and try them. So I guess that's what it serves, is something to make me interested in other places' foods. But I feel hollow after watching the show.
It's a bit like what I was talking about with Jay, where you kind of get to a point where you're like, maybe I'll never go to Tokyo. So I'll watch Anthony Bourdain go to Tokyo and eat the best food there. And that will just have to do. That's depressing.
I'll get to Tokyo. The problem is that I won't be able to take my wife. And that'll be terrible because I travel for work and I speak at conferences. And part of it is I love experiencing the new stuff and the new food and the new culture of these cities and these countries. But I've got to figure out how to get my wife there. Because, again, it feels a little empty without her.
Yeah.
Not a little. It feels really empty without her.
She's still pretty sitting amazing. Right there, right?
She's not. Oh. Have you noticed how quiet it is? She's not here. But she is amazing. Okay, so if you... if you're married, if you go to conferences, take your significant other with you, because they can be your hype man or woman. They can introduce you to people that you've wanted to meet and talk to, but you didn't have an excuse. And it's not bragging because they're not talking about themselves. It is awesome.
Huh? You've done this, I gather.
Oh, this was back when we had very small children that we could take with us, like a single infant. In fact, I'm going to Max. I'm speaking at Max next week, and I'm freaking out about my sessions. But we've been going for years. And in the early days, my wife would go with me, and she just brought a baby into the conference center. Someone looked like they wanted to stop her, but they didn't really know what to do. And so she's confident, so she just keeps walking. We go to conferences whenever we can. For her birthday, she wanted to come to one of the conferences I spoke at. That was her birthday present.
Nice.
So she likes it. She's a nerd. Awesome. And it works out well. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about Inktober, because I've been watching you post things on Twitter and stuff like that. What is Inktober and what are you doing for it?
Okay, so
this is not food related.
It's not food related, I guess if you wanted to draw food. it's something that Jake Parker started, who is an amazing artist. And he's not just a good artist, he's a he's a great cultural artist, I guess, because he likes to draw stuff from his culture that he grew up with. So you'll get like really cool versions of superheroes, but that you'll also get like Saturday morning cartoon characters and all this stuff. Like he just likes to mess around with things on top of his own character work that he does. But he started this thing called Inktober where he posts something inked every day. And I am not the same level or style of artist. I've mostly been focusing on typography so far, but I'm trying to post something inked every day because it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. And it's just like, was it Writevember? There's something in November that's for writing.
Yeah, National Blog Post Month or something, yep.
Like Novel November as yeah. well. Like there's these things. And I love the idea behind them. If they're things that you want to accomplish. So I've been sucking in as many people as I can into this, like bullying people into doing Inktober. Mark Rondina, he didn't really want to do it, or he said he didn't have time. And I'm like, that's the stupidest excuse ever. There's some people who said, well, I don't really draw well. I'm like, that's because you don't practice. If you don't draw, you're not going to get any better. Yeah. So I bully people into doing it because I think it's good for us. And then Rachel Neighbors, who is also an amazing artist, she's like, well, I'm going to be flying. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. You can't draw on a plane. No, wait, you can. You've got to do it. So I bullied her into doing the first one as well. I just think it's good for us.
Daily like practice ask, thing is amazing for...
Yeah.
Yeah.
For anything. But drawing is something that part of growing up, it's almost like we're not supposed to draw. Mm-hmm. If you asked a little kid, hey, could you draw a picture? And they said, no, I don't. I'm not a very good artist, or I don't really like drawing. You're like, there's something wrong with that kid. They've been squashed. Their creativity's been squashed, right? But if you ask an adult the same exact question, we're okay with the response, I don't really like drawing, or I'm not very good. And we're like, okay, I guess you're right. You shouldn't draw.
Right.
That, it shouldn't be okay. Right. We shouldn't be able to get out of it that easily. We should do these things because it's good for us. I'm a firm believer that drawing is good for us. It's therapeutic. It's good to get in that creative mindset.
Right.
There's few activities that get you there the same way that drawing does. So, sorry, that's my rant.
That's very inspirational. No, that's true. I like drawing and I'm not that great at it. But any skill I have is because I've done it, you know, and I've taken lessons and practiced and stuff like that. So, yeah. I'm a big believer in it too.
And you don't have to publish if you want to do Inktober. This is to the listening audience, but you should, because there's something about the public contract, right? That when you start something like Inktober and you're like, you know what, I commit to this, you now have someone that you're accountable to. Hopefully you have some friend on Twitter or Instagram who would notice you doing it or not doing it. So
yeah,
I think it's good for us to write those public contracts and then have the public keep us accountable for these things.
I totally agree. I did a picture a day for a year in 2013. And it was good on many, many levels, not just about taking pictures. So yeah.
Did it improve your skill and technique as a photographer, do you feel?
Oh yes. Yes, it did a lot.
Yeah.
But it also taught me a lot about myself and about photography as an art over and above the technique of it.
Okay.
More like the philosophy of photography.
Okay.
And yeah. It's good on many meta levels to put something like that. Yeah. The contract and the publishing of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just healthy.
What is it called? The Ulysses contract? Tying yourself to the mast? That sort exactly. of thing.
Right.
That's what you need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think is the best thing about being a grown up, Garth?
I have access to money. That's the best part. Like grown up for a while, grown up is like being a kid with money. Not that I have like this overabundance of money, because I don't. I'm a single income with five kids, right? So yeah,
right.
But I know how to save up money, and I know where the money's coming in, and I know how to control the money flow a little bit. So if there's something I really want, I can figure out how to do it and I can get it. And that I wish I had understood that as a kid, but apparently that was part of growing up for me. So yeah, that's the best part. I really like having kids and I really like being married. Mm-hmm. But that didn't feel like growing up to me like that. I don't know. I like kids. I've always liked kids. Even when I was a kid,
I liked kids. Yeah.
So yeah, that's just normal to right. be hanging out with kids, just in a non-socially weird way, like totally normal now. And my wife, she's just the sort of person that I would want to hang out with. So that didn't feel like growing up. It felt like playing house, right?
But, right, yeah.
But then when I have to pay bills, that's the lame part about growing up. But being able to actually, the flip side of that, being able to, hey, I want to buy an action figure because right. I can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you think is the worst part about being an adult?
Summer vacation doesn't exist. I guess if you're teaching, it does. But right. for the most part, no one told me that. Even when I started going to college, I needed to earn money. So summer vacation didn't exist in the same way as it did. But my, you know, your senior year or your final year mm-hmm. of high school, like that summer vacation is amazing. Like you can do nothing. Or you can do like the bare minimum and you still have all of this time. I miss that. Yeah. Someday I'm getting excited because at Adobe, if you work there for 5 years, you get a month sabbatical. That's the closest I'll probably get to a summer vacation for a long time.
Yeah. Cool.
I have no idea what I'm going to do with it. I'm totally going to waste it. I know it's going to be terrible, but yeah, hopefully I don't squander it. I'll do something epic.
Is there anything you would like to promote? Anything you're working on besides Inktober or any talks you're doing soon?
Yeah, they're just too soon is the problem. I'm speaking at Max next week, and I've got three sessions. One of them I just inherited from somebody else, and they did not have slides, and I got it last week. So,
wow. What is Max? Yeah.
Max is Adobe's big conference. So it's in Los Angeles, and it's been in Los Angeles for a number of years. But before it used to roam around, but it's once a year, and they all the keynotes and all that stuff will be streamed. So if you're listening, you can go watch that stuff. And there's big announcements, and it's fun. Cool. But the sessions, you have to be there. And it's massive, and it's a little bit on the pricey side for a conference, I'm going to be totally honest. But it's been a lot of fun the last few years. It's actually where I started my podcast and started a lot of my stuff. And I attended Max way before I got hired at Adobe. But so I'm speaking at Max, and then I'm speaking at Converge RVA, which is in Richmond, Virginia, which is going to be a blast. But I'm only going to be there for a day because I've got to fly back to San Francisco to go to Facebook because I have an open source project called Design Open. Mm-hmm. It's designopen.org. And it's about designers working in the open. And it was picked up by Facebook Open Academy, which is a program used to help students, college students, get into open source development and design. So I got a bunch of interns, is what I'm calling them, to come work on my project. So I've got to go fly out there to tell them about the project. And then I'm coming home for a week and then going back out to all things open in Raleigh, North Carolina. So, yeah, I'm going to be tired. But yeah, usually I don't speak that often. I speak at probably about five conferences a year at most. Okay. Yeah. And so for some reason this year, they just all seem to be in a 2 week period.
Nice.
But yeah. So promoting wise though, Design Open, we really are looking for contributors and people who want to help out. And then this other thing I'd love to promote, it's called Night Scout. It is the coolest idea. There is a type 1 diabetic problem of parents not knowing what their kid's blood sugar is. And so there is this sensor called the Dexcom, and someone has not hacked it, but they have augmented it to be able to get information from it onto a smartphone to deliver the information to the cloud so that parents can get access from it anywhere. And it's not FDA approved. And so the way they got around that is they just open sourced it. So there's a bunch of soccer moms setting up MongoDB instances and using Git to get the latest source code. And it's awesome to be a part of this community. But it's all written in Node, other than the Android uploader piece. And then there's a Pebble watch app. And they're working on an iPhone, a native app, but there's a web app. And there's some really fun stuff happening in the community. And again, it's this weird intersection where you have these people who know nothing about any of the open source world, totally loving and appreciating and taking advantage of it. So Night Scout is this org and this group of people who are doing amazing stuff that really actually saves lives and helps people. So yeah,
I have to plug them. We will add links to all of these very awesome things in the show notes, which again is at goodstuff.fm/grownups/4. And you can find links to all these things there. This is so awesome. Thank you, Garth, for being here and being part of this and for the great conversation. It's been very fun.
I appreciate it, Carrie. This is a great show, and I cannot endorse it more.
Oh, thanks.
The topic is great, and the way that you're presenting it is fantastic. So I'm looking forward to listening probably to other people's episodes more than my own, but I'm looking forward to future episodes. So good job.
Awesome. Thank you. Garth, what's your Twitter handle so people can find you?
Oh, right. Garth DB. D as in David, B as in boy. On everything. So
everything.
On everything.
Nice. All right. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Carrie.
Bye.
And that's the show. Thanks for joining us. Thanks again to my guest, Garth Braithwaite. You can get in touch with us anytime on Twitter @grownups_FM. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.